Hello, I'm Jo Buchan, and this is a podcast for One West. The subject today is investigations relating to problems with behaviour in the workplace. I've got John Evans with me to tell us about them. Hello, John.
Yeah, hi, Jo.
Just to start us off, what is an investigation and why might one be needed?
Well, typically you need an investigation inside an organisation if somebody has behaved not in accordance with policy, or perhaps they've behaved in a way that is unacceptable to another colleague.
As a potential investigating officer, how is it that you would have become involved?
Well, typically, an investigating officer is a normal serving manager and will get invited to do the investigation by the human resources or personnel department.
Okay, but what would have happened in terms of process before you are asked to be involved?
Well, normally, with something like this, it will be there will have been efforts to try and resolve it informally prior. So that means for a disciplinary, some preliminary work will have been done to find out what happened and if it really needs an investigation. And particularly with a grievance or something like that, then effort will have been made to resolve it informally between the people who are involved in the grievance.
Okay, so do you have to have specific training to be an investigating officer, and why would that be important?
Well, it is important because, you know, we're talking about circumstances which will affect somebody's job, and it can be a complex role, actually. So it helps to have specific training, and then from there you've got to move on and get experience.
And I suppose if I wanted to do that and I'd become that investigating officer, getting that experience, is that like shadowing?
Yeah, things like that seem to work really well. Or you can work on less complex cases first, the ones which are a bit more straightforward. But certainly sitting in, perhaps as a note taker, and watching how somebody experienced leads an investigation can be the best way of understanding it for yourself and doing it yourself in the future.
So does everything have to happen within a set time period?
4 to 6 weeks is ideal. Let's bear in mind here that, you know, often there is stress associated with the person who's being investigated. So really you want to get things done in a reasonable length of time. But at the same time, you've got to do it right. And it may be complicated, and it's especially difficult to do that under those circumstances. But really, really important nevertheless. There is no legal imperative associated with this in terms of timescale. But, you know, you don't want to be taking an extended amount of time if you can avoid it.
So getting it right first time, really?
Absolutely.
So in an investigation, do you have to speak to other people to interview them, and how does that work?
Yeah, you do have to speak to other people. It's really important to do that because there will be some complex views around very often. Yeah, you absolutely need to do that.
So how many people do you think you might have to speak to?
Well, I guess the bare minimum is the person under investigation, the person who made the allegation, normally the line manager, and immediate witnesses. It can be more, though.
What about other people involved, for example, the HR reps? You've mentioned HR before. How do you work with them?
Well, the most important thing is that you've got to adopt a collaborative approach. There will be working with you normally a HR representative on the case. And there will also be a HR representative who is there to support the person who the allegation has been made against.
And that person who you are investigating, are they allowed to have any supported people with them?
Yeah, absolutely. As I just said, they have a HR representative normally. And sometimes if they're a member of the union or something like that, then they will have support from them. Interestingly, you can also have it from a work colleague, but you cannot have it from a relative.
We've said a lot about verbal information, but what about written? Should there be a case file to read, and what might be in that file?
Yeah, it's really important to start off with the basics of a case file and build it from there. So the basics of a case file will be the allegation and some simple detail around what's happened, and then you can build it up from there.
So does everything investigated also go into the case file?
Yes, absolutely, everything. So that involves interviews and any film evidence which is there sometimes, or written evidence. It can be all sorts of things.
So it's all sensitive stuff then? And at the end of the day, someone's job is under discussion, but how does that affect your approach?
Well, it most certainly has to. It's really important to approach an investigation with a degree of sensitivity. understanding that the person who you are investigating may be upset themselves, but also there may be other people who are upset. Very often the person who's making the allegation is unhappy and also wants to see a conclusion. There will be other people also who have a view. And it's very, very important then to make sure that you are very equal in your approach, very understanding in your approach, but also absolutely insistent on getting to the truth and making sure that people answer you fully and properly so that you can do your job.
So when you're inviting people for interview, do you have to write to them? And what are the rules surrounding that, like the time, etc.?
Yeah, you do have to write to them. So they will get a letter inviting them to interview. And that's all people who are being interviewed, by the way. And normally you allow them a week of time prior to the interview. And you make it clear that they are allowed support. And I've said earlier, that can be a union representative. It can be another member of staff. But it cannot be a relative unless they themselves work for the same organisation.
So what if the person being interviewed fails to turn up?
Well, it does happen, actually. And under those circumstances, you use the support officer who deals with them to find out what happened, find out if there's a good reason for them not turning up, and give them another opportunity to attend. If they don't come at that time, then ultimately you proceed without them.
And where would that interview take place? Is it within the offices or somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, normally in offices, but the important thing is that they are reasonably discreet. And very often, if there is somebody who's upset about what's happened, who perhaps has made the allegation, then clearly you want the interviews to be away from somewhere where they are working at the same time.
Okay, so going now on to the interview itself, could you tell us a bit about interview techniques?
Absolutely. I think a good interview technique is absolutely fundamental to the whole investigation. And that means you yourself being very open in your approach. You've got to make sure that you put people at ease and be as modulated as you can about that in terms of also getting to the truth and keep asking if needs be.
So the interview techniques probably would involve body language as well. So
yeah,
at that point,
absolutely it would. I mean, you don't want to come over as being in any way aggressive, or at the same time, you don't want to come over as being passive. It's just about being really open and asking the right questions.
So do you sometimes find there are other factors relevant which are mitigation, and how do you handle that?
Well, mitigation is a really important thing to look out for. If you think about any investigation, there will be circumstances that will have affected the behaviour of the person who the allegation is being made against. And you need to understand what those are, because they can constitute a high degree of mitigation. So what I'm saying is, if somebody has acted unwisely because they're under stress, perhaps something bad is happening at home or something like that, you really need to consider that, and it's really relevant to whether they're likely to do it again.
So do you have to record the interviews, and how do you do that?
You do have to record the interviews, and my feeling would be always to have a note taker. It's very difficult to ask all the interview questions and be a note taker at the same time. So bring somebody in to do that.
And there's going to be a lot of conversation and questioning in with that interview. Is it a full contemporaneous note or a précis, capturing like the main points of the questions?
Yeah, it's really about capturing the main points of the questions and making sure that you've got the meaning of what somebody said written down.
So there's a lot to get right in this. What support does an investigating officer normally need?
Well, it's really important that an investigating officer forms a team approach to what they're doing. So, very close liaison with your human resources partner in all this, so you can discuss what you're seeing, discuss what you're hearing, and try and reach a common view on what you should be saying as a result of that.
So once interviews are done and signed off, what happens next?
Well, the next stage really is to move on to an investigatory report. That can be quite a big document, actually. It's not uncommon for it to be up to 10,000 words. And in the investigation report, you will put in the allegation, you will add in any witness statements, and a summary of what has been found, together with a recommendation to form a panel or not. And what I mean by that is that at the end of it, you are going to say, this either is or is not a disciplinary matter, or is not righteous grievance, and it does or does not need to go forward to a panel.
So what is the key to a good report, John?
I think it's important to take an intelligent view and express it. You've really got to consider the allegation in full, but also the mitigation, and give that the amount of scope within the report that is appropriate. And then it's about giving a very clear steer then to whether the panel should be formed.
Is there a broader case file that brings everything together?
Yes, there is. So ultimately, what the panel will have will be a copy of your investigation report. They will have a copy of all the interviews and everything else that is pertinent to the allegation. And that case file will also be available to the person who the allegation is being made against.
So let's say there is a case to answer and a panel is formed to consider the allegation. What role does the investigating officer take at this point?
So the investigating officer takes a really key role, actually. Their role in the panel is to present the findings of the investigation and to make sure that the panel is really, really clear on what seems to have happened in your view and what might happen as a result of that. So a very clear explanation of all of the facts in a way that they can understand is really, really important.
How does a panel work and who is involved in that?
Okay, so a panel is basically formed on the advice of the investigating officer to hear the facts of the case and to see what happens next. The panel may involve, as well as a senior manager, somebody from Equalities, possibly a child protection officer as well. And that depends on, of course, exactly what is being heard. The investigating officer, having presented all their findings, will mean that the panel is then in a decision to decide what, if any, sanction is appropriate in the particular case, and then close it out, and the person then receives the judgment accordingly.
Okay, well, thank you very much, John. That's a really good overview of what an investigating officer needs to do. It is clearly an area that needs a fair bit of skill, but one that managers can work at building experience over time. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and do check out our other podcasts as we publish them.